Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? I'm Josh Lee Kwai.
And today we have something very special to start off the episode. Very
special.
Yeah,
I'm super excited. Our first preview card.
Ever. And hopefully not the last. So Wizards has kindly graced us with a preview card for Commander 2014, which comes out it'll come out this Friday, because this episode is going to be on Tuesday.
I'm not sure how we should do this. It's our first one. Like, I feel like we should have like a curtain and we should whip it off or back real quick to reveal it, but that doesn't work in audio, so I don't know how you reveal something in audio.
Imagine there's a cape and like a wonderful magician. We're gonna whip it off the card itself.
Oh,
and
we're doing theater of the mind now.
Yeah.
I like this. Keep going.
And if you're watching the video, it's just gonna crossfade in. So
Eli, do something cool when this card reveals.
Yeah, have it like flip around a few times. Who knows? So I guess I'll read the card then.
All right. Well, yes, it is a red card, and you are Jimmy the Red.
That's right.
No wonder they gave us this card to spoil.
No wonder. The card is, drumroll, Impact Resonance. Ta-da! It is a rare instant for one in a red, and it says, Impact Resonance deals X damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures, where X is the greatest amount of damage dealt by a source to a permanent or player this turn. Whew, that's a mouthful.
That is a mouthful. I mean, the way it works is, like, however much damage something has done to something else, this does that much damage to a bunch of creatures, however many creatures you want.
Yep.
It doesn't deal that much damage to each creature. It's like, let's say, let's say somebody swung with one of their creatures and hit somebody else for 14 damage. Then you would be able to take that 14 damage and split it up how you want among any amount of creatures. So you'd still only do 14 damage total, though.
Yep. And this is definitely highly dependent on X, of course. So this isn't going to be great in every game of Commander that you play, but I think it's very situational. But when it does land, it essentially can do a very selective board wipe depending on how much damage has been dealt.
Yeah, I think, you know, depending on your deck or the decks in your meta, like, this could be good. And it's like you said, it could be a one-sided board wipe type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Damage-based stuff is generally not as powerful in Commander. So I think this is sort of... I don't know if I'm going to use it a lot in, like, it's definitely not like every deck that has red in it is going to put this in it.
Yeah, definitely. And because it's dealt by a source to a permanent or player, so it means that it's not like, for instance, if you have 50 goblins out and they all swing for one and you do 50 damage, Impact Resonance only gets to do one damage for each goblin. It doesn't get to do 50 total.
Yeah, that's actually a really, really good point. So it has to be like one source doing one large amount of damage, a bunch of little sources doing like a bunch of little amounts of damage that add up to a lot doesn't actually help you.
Yeah, so it's definitely a little situational. Josh mentioned before we started recording that if your creature is indestructible, this doesn't do much to it.
Yeah, which is pretty it's pretty common in EDH. I mean, people usually want to suit up their stuff. So the stuff that you really want to kill is usually like, it does target too, so it's usually hexproof, or it's indestructible, or it has some sort of recursion, like it's got persist or something. Like, damage-based stuff is just less powerful in general in EDH. If this thing did damage to players or creatures, or and or creatures and players, then I would say it would be a lot better.
Yeah, it's definitely a must-run if it was like that. In this case, though, I think it's... I don't know, thinking back on Commander games, I can see plenty of times when one or two, like, really impactful, to use the same word, creatures are on the board, and you really don't have any way of getting rid of them, or you don't have spot removal in your hand, or let's say you just have a card that can only do a one-for-one, and you'd rather get rid of multiple things. Impact Resonance, I think, can have a little bit more of an impact in that case, because, you know, let's say
nice
there's...
Nice one.
Yeah, thanks. Like, there's a Royal Assassin on the board and a couple of other, you know, one of those creatures that, you know, if you do something, you're afraid of it because it's going to destroy your creature or whatever. Impact Resonance can have an effect where it gets rid of a lot of people's utility creatures, for instance.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, you know, it's probably better than running just a one-off kill target creature. Mm-hmm. That usually feels bad to sort of one for one because it's in multiplayer. We've talked about this a lot. If you use one card to kill one thing of somebody else, but the other two players didn't lose anything and they didn't spend any cards, then you're down card advantage to the table.
Yeah.
So this card has the ability to kill 3, 4, 5 things. So that is pretty good upside. So I would put it in to my deck over something like a Terror probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because just the ability to just kill 4 or 5 things is good. I also think, like, it's going to be way better in a deck that's built to deal, like, large chunks of damage. Like, a Voltron-type deck. Mm-hmm. Like a, you know, something where you're going to, like, create one big thing and smash people for a bunch of damage all at once. Then yeah. this card gets a lot better because, you know, you don't want to be relying on your opponent's decks to give you this effect. You know, a single large chunk of damage. You right. want your deck to be built that way, so...
Yeah, the fact that this does have instant ability is nice because you could also, I mean, you could cast it on someone else's turn if they have something that just comes out of nowhere, but Josh is right. You don't really want to rely on someone else necessarily. I mean, I feel like this card is definitely built around me in a small way where you want to be able to use the effect at sort of for the maximum effect. And having it being instant speed is nice. Because I can imagine a situation where, let's say you do swing in with your Voltron Commander and it's Rafik or something. You couldn't obviously play Impact Resonance in a Rafik deck, but you do something like 25, 26 damage. But the guy's just like, all right, I chump block with my 1-1. Then you can cast Impact Resonance and then you can reassign all those points of damage to all their other eligible chump blockers or whatever else, or even to someone else's board. So... It does have a nice way of getting around chump blocking, but the big thing at the end of the day is it doesn't do it to a player.
Yeah. I think Rafik's actually a really interesting example because it does work. I mean, Rafik would have double strike because he gives himself double strike, but it says the greatest amount of damage dealt by a source to a permanent or player this turn. So if the source dealt damage twice, it would still count all of the damage done by that source this turn. So
right.
So Rafik's a good choice. Yeah. The more I look at it, the more it's growing on me as sort of a replacement for just a single target spot removal spell. Because, you know, you might as well have the upside of like, sometimes I can kill 4 creatures.
Right.
So.
Yeah. You know what I think this would be fun in? Your 5-color pinger deck. Because one of your 1 pinger guys, if you can get him to, or like anything that can sort of re-ping, and if you can go, not infinite, but like, I can untap this guy 50 times and do 50 damage to you or whatever. You can
That's true.
Impact Resonance and reassign 50 damage, or just assign again 50 damage divided amongst any target number of target creatures.
Well, you know, ironically, what this card would be really good against is my pinger deck.
Because yeah.
pingers are usually 1/1s. So you might be able to just go like, oh, somebody just hit you for 7. I'm just going to do 7 damage divided 7 ways to your 7 pingers and kill them all.
Yeah, exactly. I could see this being fun with a Goblin Sharpshooter and the Sack Outlet kind of thing. You know, where you're able to use the Sharpshooter a bunch of times. And
oh,
then
yeah.
You get a little extra bit on top.
Well, then, plus, if you sort of mow down a bunch of their creatures with Impact Resonance, that's going to untap the Sharpshooter a bunch of times so you can do even more damage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's a pretty cool interaction. I see some uses for it. I think, you know, it's a little bit limited, but it's definitely a cool card. It's definitely something that's pretty unique.
Yeah, and I'm excited too because this is one of a bunch of cards in the red commander deck, and I like where this is going.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of spoilers so far, and you know, we're not going to talk about all the spoilers now. We're going to wait until the next episode to talk about that stuff. But there's some awesome. I mean,
oh yeah,
there's some crazy stuff that's going to change a lot of decks that I have, I know, and probably most people have.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to talk about all of those in our next episode, not this one. So you guys can expect that for the week after the Commander decks release. But yeah, they're all monocolored. There's like a green Yokel Hops now. It's insane. There's just so many. I believe Wizards said they wanted
that green
Commander
Yokel Hops.
Yeah.
That card. Yeah. It feels like another Blood Moon. Kill
Wave
me.
Of Vitriol or something. But I think Wizards said they wanted Commander 2014 to kind of be the time spiral of a Commander set.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm super excited. Everything I've seen so far has just me almost in fear, knowing that our meta is going to change drastically because all of these new cards create so many more interesting dynamics. It's sort of like when we saw Conspiracy Spoilers for the first time. It was like, oh wow, I can't wait to draft this. I can't wait to play this, seeing what's coming up.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Very cool.
Yeah. So I look forward to Impact Resonance. I look forward to potentially also seeing if there's a card in that red deck that resonates impactfully with this card. Turning into LSV over here. So yeah, we've got a lot to look forward to.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. Do you want to go on to our main topic?
Yeah. So today's main topic, we got a good one, is called Deck Tech Daydreams.
Daydreams. I've been daydreaming about decks for, I don't know, a couple of weeks now. Different ones, you know, that I may want to start building. Or,
did it come to you in a flash of brilliance where you're like,
I don't know if it's
it.
Brilliance. Could be a flash of craziness.
Yeah, that sounds about right for your decks that you build at least. So Deck Tech Daydreams, the very clever name conjured up by Josh, are basically decks that we want to build or have ideas of brewing and haven't actually made yet. So these aren't fully fleshed out ideas, but we're sort of brainstorming them. And, you know, if you guys have obviously comments or cards that you think would fit perfectly into this deck, we encourage you to let us know as well.
Yeah, this is kind of like part of the process of brewing a deck. You know, a fun thing to do is sit around with your friends, talk about like, well, I have this idea, and here's sort of the rough outline of how it would go. And then, you know, it's amazing how often your friends are like, did you think about this card? Did you think about this card? What if somebody does this? And all of a sudden you get like a much clearer picture of, you know, how you should build the deck, because it's just hard for one person to keep like every card in Magic's history in their head all the time. So it's you know, really helpful to have other people that just sort of throw things out at you.
Yeah, so. And the cool thing about Magic is there are so many random little cards that like professional players would just not know about because it was never used in the format or whatever when it came
out.
So, but fit perfectly into the deck that you want to build. And this follows up nicely because someone asked us last week, how do you go about building a deck or starting a deck? Is it from the commander or not? And I think we can address that with each of our two ideas that we brought to the table today.
Yeah, I think that's where the idea originally came from, is like when we did that Reddit thread for the contest and people were asking questions of us, and a lot of people asked the same question, which was sort of like, how do you begin to sort of build a deck? Where does the idea come from? You know, where does your inspiration come from? That question came out a lot, and it sort of, you know, naturally got us thinking about that, got me thinking about it. Then I was thinking about building decks, and I was like, well, this will be a cool deck. And then here we are.
Here we are.
So do you want to start?
Yeah, let's get into it. So I've got the influence to build a monocolored deck, not just because I have a mono red deck and it's a lot of fun, but after this last weekend, two mono red decks made it in standard to the top eight.
Jimmy,
of the Grand
were you
Prix.
Jealous?
I was jealous. I was like, dang, I should have thought of that.
Did you feel ashamed because you're Jimmy the Red?
That I didn't play a single color of my favorite color?
Yeah, and you're playing Obzon.
Yeah, which is black, white, green.
Yeah, I mean, we might have to change your nickname now.
Yeah, I think the problem was I chose a rhino over a goblin, and I think
just a problem at a very basic level. Like, the core of your being has to have shaken you.
I think that's why the gods, they struck me down with a lightning bolt.
The
and
gods
were like, you are going to go 0-3, 0-4, because you aren't paying homage to your true colors. And here I am again, not paying homage to it.
You already have a mono red ADH deck. I mean, I don't think the gods, quote unquote, would expect you to build a second mono red. Unless,
one.
Jimmy, this is God.
Oh my, hang on.
What the hell are you doing? No. You're not called Jimmy the White.
No.
You're not even white. You're Asian.
I'm not even white. It's so true. And I have aspirations of being Gandalf the White. So I don't know. This deck is also because the mono-colored commanders are coming out. So I think this could be a really fun sort of preamble to that potentially. I have no idea what they're going to theme the white deck to be when it comes out. Whenever it does come out, I'm very excited for that. But in this case, I wanted to make a soldier token deck.
Mm-hmm.
So this sort of fills two slots in my head. One, I wanted to make a tribal deck, and I also wanted to make a token deck. So this sort of fit the bill. I think mono white would be really fun. Usually tokens are like green and black or green, red. White, and red. Yeah, so...
White's a really good token color, though.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of vigilance. There's a lot of plus
anthem
one.
Effects.
Anthem
too.
Effects, yeah. So I figured this would be a really fun sort of deck to build and sort of just mess around with. And the commander I chose, who knows if it'll change.
That's the official preamble to
preamble.
Bum, bum, bum.
Is Elish Norn, Grand Cenobite. He is...
You are a bad person.
I'm a bad person if I ever get to casting him because he's expensive.
Is it a him?
It's a thing. Maybe it's a she.
Elish Norn has the coolest headpiece in the history of headpieces.
I would love to see this be a Halloween costume.
How does it, he, she, see?
I don't think
there's probably some lore person out there.
I think she uses
like
her sense
of smell.
Like, I bet
that E.M. Marling guy or James Bianca is he, duh, or the opposite. I have no idea if it's a he or she, but that headpiece is awesome.
Yeah, it is a really sweet. And there's also great art for it on Route.
Route is sick.
Yeah.
We need to add that artwork to our...
The scrolling backgrounds.
Yeah,
well, you'll
I
see
think
it
we
right
will.
Now
I
in the video. By the way, you can watch video of this podcast if you haven't. Go to rocketjump.com. It's all there.
Yeah, Eli, put up the route picture.
It's amazing.
And go ahead and leave my audio saying that.
Thanks, Eli. Grand, if Elish Norn is a Grand Cenobite, you're the Grand Editor. So Elish Norn is a 5/2 white, so it's 7 total for a 4/7 legendary creature, Praetor, part of a cycle. He/she has vigilance. Other creatures you control get +2/+2. Creatures your opponents control get -2/-2.
What?
Yeah. So I like.
I
this
love
because...
how it has vigilance. We talked about this before, but it's like, this card needs something. I mean, just doesn't seem that powerful.
Yeah, I know, right? Double anthem effects that affects the entire board.
Yeah, all your creatures are +2/+2, and all your opponent's creatures are -2/-2.
So right off the bat, this commander, when it comes into play, just hoses half the battlefield, usually.
If somebody else is playing a token deck, they're just done.
They're done, yeah, exactly. Which I think is amazing, because Elish Norn both makes your tokens way bigger and also just hoses everyone else at the exact same time. The only issue I have with Elish Norn is that he, she, it is a lot of mana.
Yeah, 7 mana is a lot.
7 mana is
tough,
yeah.
And white doesn't have a lot of ramp.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're going to have to go to your artifacts for ramp. We've talked about that before, so I won't dwell on it. But
Yeah. So some of the feature cards here are... the first one is from... Actually got reprinted in from the Vault Annihilation, which is Marshall Koo. It's a X white. It's a sorcery. You can put X1/1 white soldier creatures token to play, and if X is 5 or more, destroy all other creatures.
That card is crazy because... 5 or more. So you can pay white and 10, make 10 1/1s and kill everybody else's stuff.
Yeah. And
then you put Elish Norn out next turn and you have 10 3/3s.
Yeah. Pretty exciting. Yeah. I think it's also just a great, like, it does exactly what your deck wants to do, which is make tokens while keeping the rest of the board stabilized. So you get to, it's like a win-win in this case. If like things are running out of control, Marshall Koo is always a great option because it's not just a straight Wrath of God effect. You actually get some upside out of it when they pop off,
mm-hmm.
which is really nice. Another card I liked was a Frontline Medic. And the other thing about this deck is, though, Elish Norn is not an easy card to get, but the rest of these cards are pretty much have been flung to the 25 cent pile.
Yeah, exactly. For the most part, there's going to be a few, but it's not going to be a really spendy deck to build.
Yeah. Frontline Medic has Battalion. He's a 2 and a white for a 3/3, and whenever and at least 2 other creatures attack, creatures you control are indestructible this turn. Nice.
That seems good.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. You're almost always going to be attacking with at least 2 creatures, and I mean, having indestructible is nice.
It's a token deck. You're probably going to be attacking with like
30 creatures. Yeah, exactly.
I like his second ability, actually.
Yeah, me too. This is why he's a true shining star, which is sacrifice Frontline Medic, counter target spell with X in its mana cost unless his controller pays 3.
Yeah.
I mean, that just comes out of nowhere, too, because if someone just is like, all right, Genesis Hydra for all my mana, and they're like, oh, did you notice Frontline Medic was sitting over here? Nope. counter.
Countered. Nobody expects counterspell from the white player.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the last thing that someone's going to be looking from you. Of course, there are the archetypes of courage. In this
you
case...
You know, I don't think the archetypes get enough play or talk about in EDH,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, I know. They're great.
They're all very strong.
Yeah. Yeah. In this case, they're all from Born of the Gods, I believe.
Yep.
And it's,
there's one for each color.
Yeah, and it's always one and then two of that color's mana cost. So in this case, Archetype of Courage is one and two white. It's a 2/2 enchantment.
It's not always one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Some of
them
can be more.
Like the green one, I think, is five and two green. But it's always two of the color,
right.
A certain amount of colors.
So it's one and two white in this case. It's a 2/2 enchantment creature, and it's creatures you control have first strike. Creatures your opponents control lose first strike and can't have or gain first strike. So that's actually pretty powerful.
Especially on defense.
Yeah.
Like while you're setting up, until you have 30 tokens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's hard to attack a player that has first strike because usually your thing dies and you don't actually trade or anything.
Yeah.
So, and it's also a 2/2 creature.
Especially because, like, if you have a bunch of, let's say, at this point, 2/2 or 3/3 tokens, and
right.
someone swings at you with their 10/10, they're like, oh, whatever, he's going to chump block with one. You just, like...
You just stack block everything,
yeah.
And be like, yeah, what do you got?
First strike damage, see you later. Obviously, this isn't as effective with flying stuff, but, you know, you can have flying.
You're in white, you're going to have flying stuff. Well, the other thing, you're in white, you're going to have vigilance, so you're going to get first strike on both attacks and defense, which is really hard to... Yeah, it's hard to interact with that.
Yeah. And then there is the wonderful Catapult Master, which is a card I just was like, I didn't even know this existed. He's a little expensive, but I think he's really powerful. It's 3/2 white for a 3/3 creature. Tap 5 untapped soldiers you control. Remove target creature from the game.
Yep. So we just start exiling dudes for every 5 soldiers that you tap.
And you'll probably have a lot of soldiers, and you might be able to do this to 2-3 creatures per turn.
Yeah, I mean, if you cast Martial Coup... For instance,
yeah,
and you cast it for, well, I guess if you cast it for five or more, you kill everything.
You
anyway.
Kill everything, but at that point, anytime someone puts
Forget
something else
that
out,
example.
Well, no, when someone puts something else out, you just
yeah,
be like,
it's
true.
You
speed.
Wipe the whole board, you make 5 guys, and then somebody's like, okay, I cast a new creature. You're like, okay, kill that, exile that, yeah.
And there, you know, I found that usually you don't come across too many hexproof creatures in the format, even though they're extremely powerful.
Yeah, I mean, people put the Lightning Greaves on their stuff or whatever, but you can, you know, that. You can respond to them equipping that, and then
exactly.
Yeah, so it's super powerful to be able to exile stuff, just because EDH is so much about recursion and like reusing your stuff, and so just getting it off the board entirely, like not even in the graveyard, is a good way.
Very effective.
There's a card on here that I need to put in my token deck.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Hour of Reckoning.
Oh, yeah.
It's 4/3 white. It's a sorcery. It has Convoke, so if you recall, Convoke means you can lower its mana cost by tapping any of your creatures, and it'll lower the mana cost by the color of the creature or are colorless. So, you know, it's 4/3 white, so you can tap 7 white creatures and just pay for the whole thing if you want to. And it says, destroy all non-token creatures.
That's a board wipe I can get behind.
I mean, it's a one-sided board wipe. We talk about these a lot. It's Cyclonic Rifts and stuff like that. One-sided board wipes, super powerful.
Incredibly powerful.
Yeah. It's the type of effect that just wins you the game, you know, against 3 other people. All of a sudden, I have stuff, none of you have stuff, you're all dead. Like, that's just how that plays out a lot of the time.
Yeah, and it's just super effective, too, just to, like, throw out. And then, you know, even if you're killing a lot of your other things, like if at the end of the day, let's say you just made like 100 tokens.
Yeah.
And then you do this and like, oh, no, all my guys that give anthem effects are dead except for my enchantments. You still probably have like 100 2/2s and you can just go all out.
Well, plus the fact that it has Convoke. So if you make 20 tokens and you Convoke this out, you probably still have mana to then play Elishnorn, let's say.
Right.
Give all your guys +2/+2. And then attack everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you can sequence it so that this have effect occurs, and then you play your general, and then you attack with the rest of the dudes that you didn't tap to cast it.
Yeah.
I think the Convoke part of it really puts it into the, like, crazy broken area.
Yeah. You can save a lot. You can make a very efficient play with this, especially because you're making... Essentially, the more Convoke cards you can put in this deck, the better in general, because you get... You know, like Obelisk of Urd is an auto include because you can
Obelisk
just play that
awesome.
Oftentimes just for free and then have all this other mana to keep doing what you're wanting and make your turns. You know, let's say you have 12 creatures out, that's 12 extra mana if you have Convoke cards in your hand, and that's going to probably be more efficient than anyone else's turn.
I think one of the issues, and mono white just has this issue, is going to be like card draw.
Mm-hmm.
you know, white just doesn't have a lot of it.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to use like Mind's Eye and some artifact-based card draw, which is fine.
It's definitely going to be heavy on artifacts.
You're going to need to stack as much card draw as you can find from artifacts in there because it's just hard. I mean, you can have stuff like Land Tax, mm-hmm. and there's some things, some other similar type effects that white has, and that's sort of give you some ramp and some card draw, but that's the real thing that this deck's going to run into. The big thing a deck like this could have going forward, and white's just notorious for being like fast out of the gate.
Yeah.
So it can be...
Very much so.
Yeah, so it can be one of those decks that's good in sort of smaller games, you know, 1v1 or three-player games.
Yeah, I could definitely see this deck having a lot of trouble with the more people that are on the game. But, I mean, the idea is to overrun someone before they're able, you know, locate the person that wants to take you out, destroy them, and then hopefully have enough juice to keep going.
I think it does have the ability to kill everyone all at once sometimes, too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
A card I have in my... my token deck is called Devout Invocation, mm-hmm. and what it does is you tap any amount of your creatures that you control, and for each creature you tap, you put into play a 4/4 angel token with flying.
Oh my gosh.
It's a really flavorful card because it's like they all kneel and pray, and then for each one of them, an angel comes and fights for them. So,
well, they're summoning six, so they're like, hey, we're almost there.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing that white has a problem with. You know, that's
getting
why
hasty.
A lot of times you want to add red is to just give yourself your stuff haste.
Yeah.
You know, that's what makes a token deck like incredibly powerful is because there's a lot of ways to just in EDH in this format to make like 100 guys on one turn.
Yeah.
But if you can't swing with them right away, sometimes it's just like, okay, then you pass turn and somebody goes, board wipe. You know, so it's either giving all your guys indestructible, you know, Soul of New Phyrexia is a good way to do it. Avacyn, obviously.
Yeah, Avacyn's definitely an auto-include.
Yeah, because you need it to make it one rotation of the table. So I think those are going to be the sort of two, maybe three big things just you're going to run into in mono-white is like card draw, ramp, and then, you know, you need to sort of give your guys haste or make it so that they can live through a board wipe.
Yeah, and anything that grants indestructible is important. One more card I'll mention is Cathar's Crusade, which I think is just sort of the staple for this kind of deck, which is whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control.
And it's stacked, so if you put 12 tokens in it, I mean, it's nuts. It's kind of like a one-sided Coat of Arms.
Yeah.
Coat of Arms is another card you probably got in
there. Yeah, oh, but, yeah, definitely.
But Cathar's Crusade doesn't actually make everybody else's stuff bigger, which Coat of Arms can do.
Right. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun. And, of course, you can just mass calcify, too, if things get too wild.
Yeah, you can just... You're mono-white, so take advantage of it. Play the stuff that only affects white creatures or only doesn't affect white creatures. Yeah, for sure.
So that's my mono-white Soldiers deck. I could see it being really fun and cheap to build and also very easily hated out if not sort of dealt carefully at the table.
I think the good thing about you building this deck now, I'm not saying you're going to, you're just thinking about it, is that, you know, the monocolored pre-con decks are going to come out pretty soon. And, you know, this is going to slot into, you know, you're going to get some stuff there. You might be able to combine it with what the pre-con deck is. I mean, because, you know, once you get to a certain level, you're not just taking the pre-con and playing it straight out of the package.
Yeah.
You're always going to mess with it. So this is a good way to sort of, I don't know, pre-mess with it.
Hopefully there will also be, like, a really sweet Planeswalker that I can choose as my commander instead of Elesh Norn.
Oh, yeah. Although Elesh Norn is awesome.
I mean, Elesh Norn is the best.
But if you can use the white Planeswalker as commander, that'll be sick.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, my turn?
Yeah, hit it.
So my deck is a Vigilance Matters, and then as I was thinking about it, it sort of turned into a little bit of a Stasis deck.
Stasis deck?
So
what do you mean by Stasis?
Oh, Stasis is a card. It's an old card, and it's one in a blue. It's an enchantment, and it says that players skip their untap step.
Uh-huh.
But there's a catch. It has an upkeep of one blue mana.
Or you just destroy the
or
Stasis.
Or you destroy the Stasis. So
it's got some of that iconic art, too. I'm looking at the art now. It's like it's like Picasso or something drew it.
The art is so bad from the early days of Magic.
Yeah, it does look like a child drew it.
Yeah.
It's unbalanced. It's wonky.
So Stasis is one of those cards that there's a lot of ways to break it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sort of destroys a fundamental part of the game, which is like untapping your stuff. And what you do is you can make it so that nobody untaps their stuff ever. So Stasis, the way that's sort of supposed to be kept in check is that you have to pay the upkeep. You have to pay one blue mana. So, you know, since you're not untapping your stuff, in theory, eventually you just can't keep it out there. You play it out, and every turn you pay one mana for it, but your mana's not untapping, so eventually it just has to go away.
Yeah.
But over the course of, you know, Magic's been around for a long time now, there's been a lot of cards created so that you can keep stasis up indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of combo pieces. So there's something like Eon Hub, which just makes players skip their upkeep.
Oh my gosh.
So if you just have that out, then you don't have to pay upkeep cost because you don't have an upkeep. And then, so what happens is nobody has an upkeep and nobody has an untap. So everyone's just drawing cards and their stuff is not untapping. Now, this is a deck based on an enchantment.
This is such a Josh deck.
Yeah, because
it's like lockdown in the weirdest.
Well, let me talk about why I sort of thought of this, and it was because of a commander. So it's not 100% like I'm making a deck based on an enchantment. It's just, it's based on a commander, and the stasis just works really well. So the commander is Derivi, Imperial Tactician. It's a 2/3 flyer, costs one and Bant. Bant is green, white, blue.
Actually, he just costs Bant, but he essentially costs one and Bant, though.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Just Bant. The special ability is you can pay one and Bant and put Derivi into play from the command zone. So
he never costs more than that.
Yeah, he never, no matter how many times he's died, he never costs more than one and Bant.
Yeah.
And then the other ability is when Derivi enters the battlefield or a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may tap or untap target permanent.
Oh, okay. I can see this working now well with stasis. I see where you're going.
Exactly. So what you can do is, even if you only have one blue mana, one island, you play stasis, if Derivi's out and you can attack, then you hit somebody and you can tap or untap your island.
Uh-huh.
And you can do that every turn, and nobody else has an untap step. So you can sort of lock the table.
Right.
This is not a nice deck.
No.
Yeah. This is not a this is like the Gaddock Teague deck or something. This is
right. But it's finding a really interesting way of going about it that's not necessarily tied to the commander. There's a couple of other cards that make it really tick.
Yeah. I mean, and then so what I wanted to do was, yeah, I'm looking at stasis, and there's other cards that sort of simulate a stasis effect. There's something like Meekstone. Meekstone just says that it's an artifact that just says that creatures with power greater than two don't untap.
Three.
With three or greater, right?
Yeah. And it's a one drop artifact.
So greater
too.
Than two. Sorry, yeah. I read it wrong. I mean,
I think that's one of those weird wording things where I don't know if Wizards ever has decided whether they should just say greater than or equal to or greater than. And
yeah, I think it's changed over the years. I think it used to say creatures with power greater than two don't untap. Anyway, so if you have three or greater, you don't untap. There's something like the Static Orb.
Static Orb is a three drop artifact. Players cannot untap more than two permanents during their untap phases.
So it's like a stasis that's a little bit more fair.
Right.
You know, it just, it keeps.
Well, you play that, people are like, oh, all right, fine. And then you play stasis and they're like, oh, that's what you're going for.
Yeah. I mean, all the stuff in your deck is going to be based on Derivi or Derivi. And so you're going to be untapping more stuff than them. And the great thing about Static Orb is that first part. If Static Orb is untapped.
Right.
So with other effects, you could you could tap down your Static Orb before your untap step so that you untap all your stuff and that untap Static Orb.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there's stuff like Winter Orb is not on here, but it only lets you untap a certain amount of permanents. It says players cannot untap more than one land during their untap phase.
Yeah.
So it just locks everybody down, right? So that's the first part of the deck. And the second part is to play stuff like Kismet, Blind Obedience, Imposing Sovereign.
Right.
All three of those cards basically say that when your opponents play stuff, it comes into play tap.
Yeah, artifacts and creatures specifically.
Yeah, so that's an old... Kismet and Stasis is an old lock, and they've printed a lot of cards sort of similar to those cards since.
Yeah, like Imposing Sovereign and Blind Obedience was in Gatecrash. So, like, it's all, yeah, definitely.
So, what that does is, like, now it's like if Stasis is out and you have a Kismet out or a Blind Obedience, they can't even play stuff to get out of it because if they play something, it comes into play tapped and then it doesn't untap.
Then they're just stuck there, yeah.
Yeah, so, but you're.
Jeez, this is awful. please tell me you're only in the dreaming stages of building this.
I think
D's
already getting mad at me just for talking about it.
I'm almost getting mad at you for talking about it because I can imagine all the pieces coming together and being like, oh, I wish I had more removal for everything on Josh's table.
So there's two more things, or really one more major thing, and the last thing is just creatures with vigilance.
Right.
Because they get around the tap on tap thing because they don't tap or untap.
Yep.
And so you need your creatures to be connecting with the opponent because that allows you to tap or untap things. Because we'll recall that Derivi's text says, when Derivi enters the battlefield or a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, right, you may tap or untap target permanent. So every time one of your creatures hits somebody, you can untap your lands.
Right. And if everyone's coming in play tapped, you're pretty much guaranteed to have your guys always hitting someone.
Exactly.
Especially if you have multiple creatures doing it. Like with Bremaz attacking, that's two
and
guys
then,
that untap.
Yeah,
right,
and
there.
Then the next turn is three, and the next turn is four. And because players can't untap their stuff,
interesting,
they're not able to do anything on their turn. So it's like you do it, and then you say go. They can't do anything. They can maybe play a land. And
right.
And then it's your turn again, and before you know it, you're allowed to do everything in your deck, but they can't do anything in theirs.
Do you want to combine my deck and your deck and make it a token deck so that you always have tons of guys that can untap your lands?
Yeah, that might work. Yeah, just swing with 12 guys. And
yeah.
That's the thing. You don't need a lot of things to kill everybody. You can oftentimes do it with like one Sarah Angel because you just go, I attack you for four, untap my thing, go. They can't untap. Everything they play comes into play tapped. Then it's your turn. I hit you for four again, go. I hit you for four again,
yeah.
And you just do that because there's no way out of it.
Right. So how many cards realistically do you need to have out that have these effects, these universal board things come into play tapped? Like
You really just need one. So you put in the tutors, Enlightened mm-hmm. Tutor, Idyllic Tutor, you know, the stuff that lets you go find enchantments.
Yeah.
And then, you know, really you can get it started even with just Stasis and your commander.
Wow.
Because with just Stasis and your commander, if somebody has not a flyer,
mm-hmm.
you can just keep Stasis up forever that way. Not forever. You're hitting them for two every turn, but that's 20 turns. You're going to get 20 draw steps.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot more gas.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's how you built in card draw to this deck, is just lock everyone else down so you get more draw steps.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they can't really use theirs.
Exactly. So it's a mean deck, but anyway, that's a starting off point. I'm sorry, Jimmy, if I ever build it.
You know, I will be very happy to see it built because I don't think I've seen a deck like this before. I think it's got this very special, I don't know. It's got a thing going for it.
I'll bring it out against like Kessler.
Yeah.
Or somebody who's like more spicy. It'll be like my Joyra deck. I won't play it that often.
You play it to see how effective it is, and then once is enough with this kind of deck, I feel like.
It's like, if I've lost three or four in a row or like,
oh, yeah.
You know why I wanted to build this deck actually? Blood Moon.
Oh,
I'm like, screw you guys are all playing Blood Moon. I'm going to do something that you really won't like, too.
There you go. except this is like 99 cards built to make you not like it. Blood Moon's just one or whatever.
But Blood Moon makes me like not like it the same amount that this deck will.
Yeah,
like.
Exactly.
I mean, does the same thing to all my decks that this whole deck
I don't
deck
know, Josh.
Do.
Maybe you should just start running more basic lands.
Screw that.
Well, the person that still
Speaking
powers on through.
Speaking of running more basic lands, let's talk about your next idea.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be lots of land in this one.
There
probably
won't be
not
a single basic
yeah,
in this
no,
deck.
Yeah, no. I think
You're
any
gonna
basic
You're
going to
know
lands.
My pain about Blood Moon when you build this deck.
Absolutely. This deck is my, I call it my five-color cascade deck. Originally, I wanted to make this deck with like Maelstrom Wanderer. Mm-hmm. And I'll read Maelstrom Wanderer because he is a commander staple and also sort of explains cascade very well. So the idea is cascade. Maelstrom Wanderer is a 7/5 for 8 mana. He's a ton of mana, whatever. The main thing is he has cascade, cascade on him. But I'll just read what cascade does. When you cast this spell, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card that costs less. You may cast it without paying its mana cost. Put the exiled cards on the bottom in a random order, then do it again. So Maelstrom Wanderer gets to cascade twice, which is why it's so awesome, because you get to put essentially two cards that are 7 mana or less converted mana cost into
it's
play.
It's broken.
Yeah. The thing is, it takes a lot of time to get up to that 8 mana. And so I was looking at this, and I was like, you know what? I think this would be a lot more fun if you could do it Josh style in 5 colors.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So there's,
I like it.
So there's a lot more fun commanders you can do. I think Child of Alara was my final choice of who might be a fun commander
really?
For this deck. Yeah, just because it's got the fact that you can just control the board with him in a way.
Child of Alara, you want to read?
Yeah, he's a Wooburg, so he's one of each color. He's a 6/6 legendary creature with trample. On the art, it looks like a giant baby erupting from the sand. I don't know what's happening there.
There's a giant baby.
It's a giant baby.
From the sand. Yeah.
When Child of
99% sure that's what it is.
Yeah, now that I look at it more, it's very disturbing. When Child of Alara is put into a graveyard from play, destroy all non-land permanents. They can't be regenerated.
It's pretty good because it's a board wipe on a stick.
Yeah, it's a board wipe on the stick. I believe the rules go, he hits the graveyard and then he gets exiled as a commander. That's what happens. They die.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can still put him in the command zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Child of Lara, just because he has the five colors, I often really don't see him being cast too often unless things are going really poorly. I mean, that or I play Sliver Hive Lord or Chromat, just
Progenitus.
Yeah, Progenitus is the other one.
Yeah, I mean, I like Child of Lara because it's castable and it has a big effect on the game.
Yeah, it has a huge effect.
People won't want to attack you if you can block, if they don't want the whole world blown up. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good, but Child of Lara is going to function like Chromat does in my other deck, where it's just allowing you to play those colors, and once in a while you might cast them.
Yeah, exactly. Once when you need to. So the idea with this deck is just to sequence, you know, really well, and I think this is going to take a lot of time to really make correctly,
right?
Because you know you have a lot of different Cascade cards. Like Maelstrom Wanderer is a guy that costs 8.
We should say Cascade is like one of the more broken mechanics ever created.
Yeah, it allows you to cheat out huge stuff.
Yeah, and like we've said many times, like cheating mana cost of stuff is like super broken. Also, you can build your deck at certain points where like people build their deck so that, you know, the way Cascade works is it can only hit certain mana points.
Mm-hmm.
So you can build your deck so like there's nothing
above this or
above this cost or under this cost, and so you always know you're going to find one of two cards or the exact card that
exactly.
you need, because it'll just keep looking through the deck until it finds something that sits at that mana cost.
Yeah,
and so that's one of the ways that Cascade can really be broken, is it can just, you know, allow you to find something 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm. And at the other idea with this deck is that you have access to all the colors, so your Cascades essentially can be you know, you can bounce stuff back to your hands with mm-hmm. these colors. You can play stuff again. But more importantly, you can also manipulate the top of your deck. So you can, with a scroll rack, put something like Violent Ultimatum at the top, which is a... it's a 7-costed sorcery that's 2BR, 3RR, and 2GR. And
so it's 7-costed, you can get it with Maelstrom Wanderer.
Yeah, and you can destroy 3 target permanents when you cast it. So, I mean... it's a mean deck because it wants to play stuff, be like, all right, sweet, I'm going to throw this on top of my deck. I know exactly what I'm going to cascade into. With Maelstrom Wanderer, you could put 2 cards on top, which is just brutal.
I don't think it's mean because it's not actually like locking other people out from doing what they want to do. It's just doing powerful stuff, but that's okay. That doesn't make it mean.
Right. Thanks.
Yeah.
I think me feel a little better about it. And the other thing is I also want this deck to function without Cascade, essentially. So you have cards like Maelstrom Nexus, which makes the first spell you cast every turn have Cascade.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, because even if you cast just a normal card, it works as if it has Cascade. That's broken.
Yeah, and really...
everything you cast is just going to make mm-hmm. 2 or 3 other things happen.
Really, the combo you want to do is have something that can help stack the top of your deck, like Jace or Scroll Rack, and then have something like Maelstrom Nexus out and just be like, all right, cool, I can sequence this into this and this into this, and always just get maximum value and, you know, hopefully draw a lot of cards in the meantime.
And the good thing about Cascade is even if you don't sequence it, mm-hmm. you still get something. You know, it's like it still cascades into something.
Yeah.
Like, if you haven't set up the best thing ever, it doesn't matter. You're just getting free something else. You might not even know what it is, but you're going to get something.
I also like the idea that you can just sometimes just roll the dice and hit something insane.
Yeah.
You know, I want to put Joyra in this deck as well, because I feel like she has the same ability, kind of, where you're cheating.
She cheats stuff out.
So if you don't get your main plan going, you can always just Joyra out some other spells that, you know, let's say you don't have something that can stack the top of your deck with your Cascades. You can just use Joyra instead.
Yeah, totally.
Legacy Weapon is a card I want to put in there, because now I'm seeing all these awesome cards that want all 5 colors of your mana.
Yeah, this is like a Wooburg deck.
Yeah, it's Wooburg with Cascade, yeah. So
yeah,
Legacy
Weapon is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it also is can be brought out with Maelstrom Wanderer. It's a 7-drop artifact, and for Wooburg, you can just tap Wooburg and remove target permanent from the game, which is pretty sweet. And the best thing is if it's
target permanent.
Target permanent. Yeah. You can lands anything you want. And the great thing is if it's put into a graveyard, you just put it into your library instead.
They can't get rid of the legacy weapon.
You can cascade it again if you are able to find a way to get it back.
There's another one you have on here called Fist of Suns.
Oh yeah.
And it says you may pay Wooburg rather than pay the mana cost for spells that you play.
Yeah. So this
is crazy. It makes all your spells cost 5 basically instead of whatever they would cost.
Yeah. So you could be.
It also looks like the Thanos's like power gauntlet or whatever thing.
Oh yeah, the not the Gauntlet of the Galaxy. That's a terrible mashup of two names. It's got, you know, the 5 like destiny crystals or whatever on it. So it's really great because it doesn't affect the actual text of Cascade. So you can play Maelstrom Wanderer for 5, and it's still, because it says how much the card costs.
Yeah, it doesn't care what you paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't care what you paid for it. It's, you still get to get the full Cascade benefit. So there are a lot of like fat creatures in here that this card just lets you cheat out.
Can we just call this the Thanos deck from now on?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Actually, man, hopefully there is the card similar to Thanos that I can use as a commander.
I think Progenitus is pretty close.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And there's also All Suns Dawn.
Oh, yeah, this is a cool card.
4 and a green sorcery. For each color, return up to 1 target card of that color from your graveyard to your hand.
So you just, I'm going to get 5 cards out of my
graveyard. 5 cards out of my graveyard. Yeah, almost guaranteed you're going to get 5 cards.
Then you put Regrowth in, and you regrow the All Suns Dawn.
Oh, no, it gets exiled, unfortunately.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't cheat.
Yeah. Don't cheat, guys. Don't cheat.
Don't cheat.
Although I'm sure there are some cards that are like that affect the exiled cards. I know there are a couple that help bring them back or something. There's something crazy out there in the universe.
There are crazy things in the universe, like Thanos.
Like Thanos, yeah. So, yeah. So this deck is a Johnny deck that can be turned very spiky depending on how you build it and whether or not you're one of those guys that's like, I'm going to cast this spell, and I only have one spell in here that can be affected by it. So I'm essentially just turn my library upside down, find that spell, shuffle it, and then put the rest underneath because it's the only thing that gets cast or whatever. But who knows if I go that route.
It seems super fun.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I kind of just want to...
And the thing about 5-color decks is like you could just put anything in there that you think of. Like mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about like, is it in the colors that I want or whatever. You can just be like, this card's awesome. I'm putting it in there.
I'm putting it in there, yeah. So that's definitely the goal. I can finally use all those lands that I don't have, either have extras of or just don't know what to do with otherwise.
Right. Well, this is a great time because you get all the shard lands, all the wedge lands, you know, you can put those all in there and it's a lot easier to make a 5-color commander deck
exactly.
than it was before cons came out.
Yeah, definitely. So that's my 5-color Cascade deck.
Sweet.
Every flavor of the rainbow.
Every flavor of the rainbow. It's magically delicious.
It is magically delicious.
Okay, so my next deck.
The final deck of the night.
The final deck of the evening.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yeah. What was our tune for the deck?
I already forgot. It's for the commander, right?
Crap, No idea. That's not what it was.
The commander that comes out is like, hold on, that's my theme. I don't know about that.
I was promised a theme. This is...
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a chaos deck. I've always wanted to build a chaos deck. I know this is a thing. A lot of people have these. I just have never built one, and it seems like it would be just like
this is
a ton
great.
Of fun.
This is the exact opposite of your other deck, I think.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
All about locking the board down. This is about blowing the world up.
Maybe that's why, because I felt guilty about even thinking about that other deck that I'm definitely going to build and make everybody mad. So then I thought, well, after I do that, I'm going to need a fun deck to go to. And I think this is going to be this one. So the chaos deck is going to be all the crazy chaotic cards from Magic's history.
Nice.
And looking for a commander for it, because I, you know, in my normal fashion, I was actually building the deck before I even knew what commander I wanted. But I found the perfect one.
Ooh, and he's a commander pre-built, too.
Yeah, it's Ruhan of the Fomori. He's a legendary creature, giant warrior. He costs 1 and Jeskai.
Ooh.
That's red, white, and blue.
Nice.
He's a 7/7. It says, at the beginning of combat on your turn, choose an opponent at random. Ruhan of the Fomori attacks that player this combat, if able. This is normally a card that I would hate, but in this deck, it just seemed too on point not to use.
Right. I was going to say, this is as chaotic as it could get. Roll the dice. And it's kind of funny because when we play in group games, it very often that's what it comes down to.
Well, sometimes we actually do just roll dice.
Yeah,
right?
Be like, all
right,
you're 1-2, you're 3-4, and you're 5-6, and you roll a dice, and whatever happens, happens. But Ruhan forces you to do that.
Yeah, you'll notice I actually very rarely do the dice thing, so maybe I've been jealous of you guys doing it.
Yeah, well, you usually just choose the right person to attack, which is...
Or choose not to attack.
Not to, yeah. It's one or the other.
Which boggles people like Glenn and Marshall. Why wouldn't you attack?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, I like Marshall's thing, which is kind of similar to mine, which is sometimes you just want to be like, you dude, you and me, we're going at it, and whoever ends up on top... We'll find out.
It doesn't matter because you're
doesn't
both going
to
lose.
Yeah, because someone else is just going to pick
I
you up.
I love
off.
That strategy. You guys go for it.
Yeah, right?
so you know, some of the cards that, just the chaotic cards that I was looking at that just seem... See, I think the point of this deck is actually not to build in an actual win condition.
Mm-hmm.
Is to, like, every game try and figure out how you can win it. Because I'm going to put in cards like...
That's fun.
Yeah, I'm going to put in cards like Confusion in the Ranks.
Oh, God.
So it's an enchantment. It costs 3 and 2 red. It says, whenever an artifact, creature, or enchantment enters the battlefield, this is anybody, not just you, its controller chooses a target permanent another player controls that shares a card type with it. Exchange control of those permanents. So if you play a creature...
Oh, my gosh.
So anybody plays a creature, they look across the table and go, well, I'll take that one, and you get the one I just played.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's kind of funny because if done right, that could be your win condition.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you have, like, a haste enabler, be like, let me take your Crater Hoof Behemoth, or let me grab this for you, whatever, and I'm just going to go nuts.
Exactly. And I think part of the point of the deck would be to just put, besides the chaos cards, to put, like, really crappy, like... the worst creature
just like
you can imagine, because you know when you're going to be giving it to other people trading it with them.
You could build a whole deck around Confusion in the Ranks. Oh, my gosh.
another one I like is called Psychic Battle. It's 3 and 2 blue, another enchantment. It says, whenever a player chooses one or more targets, each player reveals the top card of his or her library. The player who reveals the card with the highest converted mana cost may change the target or targets.
Are we playing Calvin Ball here? What's happening?
That's exactly what it seems like.
Yeah.
If two cards are tied for the highest cost, the targets remain unchanged. So,
wow.
So, like, it's, let's just say somebody goes lightning. I'm gonna path to exile that creature. Well, they say I'm gonna path to exile that creature, and then you go, hold on, everybody flip up their top card. Whichever person has the highest converted mana cost actually gets to target the Path of Exile somewhere else.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it just makes it so every time you cast a spell, you have no idea what it's going to do.
You know,
it could kill your own creature.
Yeah. If you play that and I'm playing my Cascade deck, I'm just going to throw the most expensive thing I have on top and always win that battle.
It's true.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's true. Like something like Helluva.
Right. They can
Skull Racks
the top
in
of your
general
deck.
Make that really, really powerful.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Another one I like is called Thieves Auction. This one's insane. It's 4 colorless and 3 red. It says, exile all non-token permanents. That's lands too. All non-token permanents.
Ugh.
Starting with you, each player chooses one of the exiled cards and puts it onto the battlefield tapped under his or her control. Repeat this process until all cards are exiled this way. So basically, you put all the permanents into the middle, and then you go around in a circle, playground style, and you just draft them. So you're like, oh, I want that, I want that. I want that. You don't even have to take lands and everything.
This is the ultimate red card. This is it. The art on it's pretty fabulous too. This artisan or this noble wealthy court man is getting his clothes taken off.
He's just getting
He's
literally getting the clothes taken off his back.
What do you think of Warp World?
Yeah, Warp World's another really good one. You want to read it?
This is Craig's least favorite card of all time.
Craig will hate this deck.
Yeah,
then.
It's 5 and 3 red sorcery. Each player shuffles all permanents he or she owns into his or her library, then reveals that many cards from the top of his or her library. Each player puts all artifact, creature, and land cards revealed this way into play, then puts all enchantment cards revealed this way, and puts all cards revealed this way that, and then puts all cards revealed this way that weren't put into play in the bottom of his or her library in any order.
So basically, you only put permanents into play.
Yeah, and not planeswalkers specifically.
Right.
So it's just like, hey, everyone, you got 20 things out, shuffle it up.
See what you get.
Reveal the top 20 cards, yeah. Gonna warp
awesome.
This world around.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Especially, but I feel like that'd be so much fun in Commander, though, if you like really had a significant board state and just be like, all right, warp world, and at that point, it's anyone's game. Because someone could literally put out an infinite combo.
Yeah, you don't even know. Like, especially if they have a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Another card I really like is Hive Mind.
Ooh.
Whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell, each other player copies that spell. Each of those players may choose new targets for the copy. So if somebody plays a Path to Exile, everybody gets the next Path to Exile something. It really does wonders with counterspells.
Right.
Because somebody goes, I'm going to play this. Everybody copies it. Then somebody goes, I'm going to counter it. Everybody copies the counter.
It'll go crazy. I feel like this is a rules nightmare because you'll sit around being like, all right, what is the stack? And what's on it? How does this stack even work at this point?
I hope that it'll just keep those mono blue counterspell decks like, just like, oh, forget it. I'm not even going to play my counterspell.
Right. They try and counter. Everyone's like, we counter your counter.
Yeah, I use my counter to counter your counter. Yeah, I use mine to counter yours. Oh, yeah.
I feel like this deck should be called When the Dust Settles. you should play All's Dust in there, too, if you're going to be heavy on board wipes and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if I will because you want stuff to be out.
Right.
So that you can do all the crazy
stuff. So you can play Warp World?
Yeah, because it sucks if you play Warp World and there's like no creatures out there, right?
Yeah.
It's so much cooler if there's like 1,000 things out.
If everyone has 1,000 things out.
Yeah. So anyway, I think you guys get the idea. Like, I think the fun way to build the deck is literally like, it doesn't have any specific, it's not like, I'm going to get an Insurrection, I'm going to win, or I'm going to get this combo and win. It's just like, I don't know, I'm just going to exchange permanents with everybody, and I'm going to try and, like, at the end of that, like, hopefully
pull out the win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's chaos, right?
That is chaos. I can't hate this deck that much because it is strong in red, and red is that chaotic element. And I just think it's hilarious. I think a card that you should think about putting in is Goblin Assassin.
Oh, yeah, that's the one we talked about with James
Bianca,
right?
Where you just flip a coin and you have to sacrifice a creature every time he or another goblin comes in. You kind of have to build around him.
No, you could just throw him in there because it's a chaos deck.
You don't
have to build around stuff. Actually, the coin flippy cards,
yeah,
it's a really good point. I think it needs a lot of coin flippy cards.
Just pure chance.
Yeah, you should just be like flipping coins. Just be like, I don't know, here we go, flip a coin, let's see what happens. Like, really? I think that's the spirit of the deck, is like a lot of it is just like not like, oh, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to take this thing. And it's like, nope, I'm just going to play this card. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I like it. I think it's really funny. I think it's kind of the thing that breaks a meta a little bit, because no one can really plan for it, right? Like, what deck do you choose against this deck? Because you're not going to be like, all right, Mono Blue going to counter everything. Then you just get the one thing out that's like, nothing matters.
Nothing matters.
Reality is non-existent. Like, we all just become nihilists by the end of it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, just having this deck exist and the possibility of it coming out within your playgroup will probably warp it in a weird way, where, and also might just take some of the seriousness out of it. Like, people ask us too, like, there's two sides to the same question, which is like, I want to play a mean deck, how do I make my friends like it? Or my friends are playing a mean deck, how do I tell them not to play that? Like, a deck like this might help, like, bring things sort of towards the middle a little bit.
Yeah, just break it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I could see this being a lot of fun. I could see all these decks being a lot of fun, actually. And I think that this strikes a nice balance, too, because at a certain point, because now you have 4 commander decks.
No, I have like 9.
You have 9? I haven't even seen half of them.
Yeah, I know.
What?
I sort of build them, and then, you know, once in a while we play them. I don't know.
I played your Joyer deck once. By the way, that was enough times to play against
that
deck.
It's undefeated. I've only played it about 4 times.
So. Yeah, you may as well just retire it and put it into the pantheon of undefeated decks. So I'm glad you came up with this deck. I've always wanted this. The Chaos deck has always had sort of like a part of me as well, because that's why when I first made my Jaleva deck, it kind of had that chaotic element where it's like, you get to put the biggest, weirdest, meanest spells in here, or just the wackiest ones. When I made my mono red Kiki Jiki deck, I put Warp World in there, and Craig balked at me.
Craig will hate this deck then.
He was aghast that I would put such a crazy card in there. I was like, but why not?
It's fun.
It's fun. So those are our 4 deck brews.
Woohoo. I actually have a couple more. I'll save them for later.
Okay, cool.
You know, as I was doing this, I was like, ah, crap, here we go. I'm going to have to, like, go online now and order up a whole bunch of cards. And then I kept coming across other cards where I'm like, well, that won't work in this deck, but there's a whole other deck now that I want to build. Yeah, so thanks a lot, everybody.
Yeah. This is the spirit of Commander, though, where it's find an idea, find a cool idea, either a cool commander or a color combination or just an idea, and then find the way to build it. And that's the thing. Like, Magic is this gigantic toolbox of equipment, and there are some staples that you'll have in every deck, but there are also so many ways that varies that you could just go nuts doing other stuff.
Hey, and you know, the great thing I just thought of is we have all these listeners, and we've just laid out, like, very basically, like, the direction we're thinking of going, and you guys have listened, so, yeah, hopefully you have some ideas to help us out, help build these decks, help flesh them out. So I'm putting everybody to work. Like, yeah, let's go to the comment section at Rocket Jump. And, you know, if for any of the ideas that we've just talked about, if you have some ideas for cards that might fit in there, that might work really well, you know, let us know, because, you know, we're going to be building these decks. So.
And giving away stuff.
Oh, we can always give away prizes.
Woo! So it's not like we're just putting you to work for nothing. All right. So we've listed out 4 decks. Let us know what cards you think might be great in one of these decks that we didn't mention.
We did mention,
and you know,
one of the cards we didn't mention.
Yeah,
Got one of the cards.
And so we'll choose the I guess.
Yeah, could... no fair. Just repeating cards we already talked about.
You guys should put Joyra in the Joyra deck. Bingo, winner. Yeah, and then we'll choose some winners from that. Maybe we'll actually choose winners based on something that surprises us.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll take the randomness
element.
It'll
be merit based. It's not gonna be random like before. We got all kinds of stuff from GPLA. We've got new playmats.
Oh yeah, got a couple of Rattleclaw Mystic playmats.
Of course, we've always got booster packs and the rest of it. So yeah.
So excellent times.
Cool. VGHS, let's talk about that really quick.
Oh, yes, that's right. VGHS is out. By the time this episode is out, the third episode will have been released on
Rocket
Jump. The
third episode was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. Things really do take a turn for the dark side here.
Oh, man, wait until episode 4, everybody. Episode 4 is...
It's a ride. It's a warp world of an episode.
Dude, episode 4 is like your coming out party, though.
Yeah, it is. Jimmy Wong, the actor, gets to show his merits and act
his
butt off.
I mean, no joke. All jokes aside, like, you're awesome in that episode. Like,
thanks.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was a whirlwind of emotion doing it.
I bet
rewatching it and thinking about it, and it's like my brain is still trying to figure out how to process everything that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, I don't want to do any spoilers, but I had a really rough year last year, and that episode like hit me.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
okay.
So. I mean, it's great. It's amazing. Like I was like, damn, Jimmy can act.
I've heard a couple of comments similar.
And people
to
are
that.
Already saying it. They haven't even seen episode 4
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, no,
like,
right.
Just wait.
Yeah.
I mean, some people have seen it because you can go on Vimeo right now. And,
yeah. You can buy the episodes online. If you go to buyvghs.rocketjump.com, we have a few options available there for you guys to check stuff out.
I mean,
out.
Why wait? Just go. It's not that expensive.
Yeah, it's not that bad
like
at all.
Going to a movie and you're gonna get even
more 6 hours
out of it.
Value
yeah, exactly.
Instead of two.
So totally worth it.
Yeah. So the third episode is out today. I highly suggest you guys catch up on it if you haven't even seen the series yet. Just start from season 3. I mean, you'll be fine. You'll have some questions, and if you really like what you see, then go back and check out the other seasons because they're a blast and there's so much fun stuff.
I mean, seasons 1 and 2, they're not like they're not. It's not like watching a full season of a TV series,
right?
Like 22 episodes, like. You only have 3 hours of stuff to watch or so to catch up to season 3. So it's easy to do that. I mean, like Jimmy said, you can start right at the start of season 3, but I would recommend starting at season 1 and watching the whole thing through. I mean, you will not regret it. The show's terrific.
And you get to follow the whole story, too. It's a lot of fun, especially because this is the last season.
The final season.
The final season.
The epic conclusion. The last chapter. That was some good copy somebody wrote.
That was
sure
good
who.
Some copy. Yeah, you should go into the voiceover business.
I
you and
go
Marshall
into the trailer
together,
business.
Man.
What
yeah.
am I doing?
Jeez, what
yeah,
are you
geez.
Doing? We have a sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, hosted by Alex Kessler and Glenn Jones. It's a great look into the modern format if you guys are looking into that, essentially.
It's also just sort of about competitive magic in general. Jimmy and I have sort of, we went and played in the GP last weekend, and we're just sort of like dipping our toe in the water of, some competitive stuff, mostly just because Alex and Glenn are talking about it a lot.
Yeah.
And we're involved with that podcast too. So, it's fun for us to sort of experiment with it. And man, those guys are smart. Like, they know a lot of stuff. Their last few, a couple episodes ago, they were talking about sideboarding, which is something that, like, when I played at the GP, I was like, I have a sideboard.
I have
what
no idea.
What the hell am I doing? I have no idea. And then, and that episode, I was like, man. I wish I knew all that stuff before the GP.
Yep. So they definitely have some sage advice. Lots of leveling up happening there. And they're just really smart guys. They know a lot about the game. They'll talk about some cards that... I really like this part of Magic where you can hear someone talk about a really standard card that's really powerful, a modern card that's powerful, a legacy card that's powerful, and a commander card that's powerful. And they all have their own different merits.
Right.
And being able to look at that and being able to decode why a card is good or not, I feel like helps you across all the realms.
Yeah, because just from a philosophical standpoint, you can like, oh, that's how they evaluate a card, and I can bring that to my own game and my own card and use the same philosophy.
Yeah.
So definitely, Masters of Modern, check them out. You won't regret it.
Yep. And it's all at, again, rocketjump.com under the podcast section. They post new episodes every Thursday.
Awesome.
All right. Well, that will about wrap us up for this episode today. Remember, post some comments in Rocket Jump and let us know what you guys might add to these decks. And,
yes, please help me build my decks.
Yeah. Surprise us with some cool choices. And, you could be handsomely rewarded for
you
your
could
efforts.
Win huge prizes
coming at you to your doorstep wherever you are in the world. We'll send it to Antarctica if we have to.
Wow, you're making a lot of promises there.
Hey, I'm shipping it out, not you, so
that's true.
I have to eat my own words here.
That's true. That's why I'm not making promises.
Yeah, exactly. We will ship it to the moon in 20,000 years when that's possible. Actually, probably sooner than that,
I hope somebody
right?
from the moon enters. That would be really interesting.
That'd be really cool, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably not going to happen, though. All right, everybody. See you next time.
Au revoir.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.